Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the P1 Max Verstappen podcast with Matt and Tommy. Today, we are, of course, reviewing the first race of the season. We are back, Formula One in 2024, and what a delightful, nail-biting fight it was between Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo for P13 and P14 on the cool-down lap. Am I right, Tom Bellingham? What a race. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, Formula One is back, and it's like it's never been away for many reasons why it feels like 2023, the sequel.
Certainly does.
But we'll get into it.
We certainly will. Before we do, want to quickly do a shout out for our P1 live show tickets. If you haven't got them already, we're doing Cambridge, Bath and London, middle of April. Come and join us, meet like-minded Formula One fans. People have come on their own, people have come in groups. It is such a wonderful experience. We'd love to see you there. Link will be in the description and all over our socials. Okay, let's start with our most memorable moment, and my most memorable moment, when it ended.
Wow.
When
what ended?
The season, the race, I don't know. The race. Like, it actually, at the beginning, not with Max necessarily, but from P2 down to P5, it looked promising. It looked like we might get a serious battle between Perez, Sainz, Leclerc and Russell. We had to almost immediately start imagining that Max Verstappen didn't exist in Formula One. And that was the battle for the lead. And it seemed like it could, you know, that could be the thing that gives us entertainment throughout the race. But that didn't really come to fruition either. And it was just, it was a quite a mediocre race. Let's be real here. There were small moments, but not a lot. And Bahrain is a great track, in my opinion. And I felt like it didn't deliver anywhere near to the level that we've come to expect from it. You've said before, Tommy, that it's quite an underrated track in a lot of people's books. And I completely agree. I think it's right up there as a track that should promote lots of overtaking. But we didn't really see it. So it was quite a slow ending to the race as well. The only thing that we were invested in was Magnussen, Ricciardo and Tsunoda because of Tsunoda's team radio. That's the only thing we were kind of locked in with for the last few laps. And then obviously that big battle between Ocon and Gasly for 17th when Gasly had gone in the pits for fresh softs. What controversy and drama.
You do wonder how Formula One are going to spin it with these graphics. They have things like the fight for 17th. But yeah, it was a flat start to the season, sadly. Obviously, you know, cover the elephant in the room. I'm sat here wearing a Max Verstappen t-shirt and Max is my favourite driver. But, and I've said this so many times, I don't think it's a surprise that he won. It certainly wasn't. But it's a shame that not a lot of other stuff happened, I think. We've seen so much dominance in the past and I know a lot of people will be sort of doom and gloom that it looks like Max is a long way ahead, to say the least. But I think the problem for me is that race really didn't deliver in other aspects. Normally, we're here sort of beating that drum of going, look, well, there's so much other stuff in Formula One to look at. Look at the midfield. Look at the battle for second. And apart from the Ferrari battle for a bit, yeah, there's quite a lot of moments in the race. You don't need every Grand Prix to be like this absolute wall-to-wall entertainment battle. But yeah, a lot of times you just looked at the order, nothing would happen for 10 laps before you'd seen an overtake, and you look at the gaps and everyone, no one's within DRS. And then even when they do get within DRS, I mean, yeah, what where's this overtaking? Oh my God, the new cars are going to be so easy to overtake. And then you watch Daniel Ricciardo on soft tires, can't get past a Haas at Bahrain, which is meant to be an easy track to overtake with DRS.
Yeah, DRS enabled on lap one did a lot as well, didn't it? That, if anything, just created a DRS train in the midfield, which didn't actually promote all too much chaos either. And Verstappen was clear by a second pretty much by the end of lap one. So there wasn't much to really rave about with that either. Question from P1 Patreon member James BWFC22. Is there any chance they can bring the 2026 regulation changes forward to 2025? Obviously a joke from James. That's not going to happen because teams have to prepare for said regulation changes. But what I will be aware of, and what Formula One and Liberty Media are going to be aware of, is the exact picture that is being painted before them with the sport and its current state. They hit in 2021 through Drive to Survive in the early years of that, some amazing peaks for the sport, the interest through the roof. But the thing is, now it's dropping. The interest is of course going to start to wane and start to dip because people don't like domination. A lot of sports, there is some level of unpredictability for the win. But for some reason, Formula One cannot have two teams create a similarly paced car at the front of the field. Hardly at all. Obviously, 2021 was a pipe dream. But apart from that, maybe the start of 22. But every other year, it just seems like a team get it right and then one driver is so clear of the other one, and that's what Formula One is. So I think that, yes, there isn't much we can do between now and 2026. I thought Red Bull might take it a little bit easy this year so that they don't do anything drastic for 25. But no, Max was like, I want to drive fast and I will.
At least in 2025, we have, looks like we're going to get, well, we are going to get one huge change. And I think that will have that kickstart effect on everything else. I think we've gone into this new season as well. The pecking order is very, very similar, to say the least. No driver changes. So there's not even that narrative of, you know, like the first race of the next season, you'll have all these driver changes and things. And I think, yeah, the problem is the first race was just a bit of a flat feeling because there was so much excitement for Formula One to be back. There always is. We complain about, oh, it's not going to be this, this or that. But we all sit down and watch it, and it just sadly didn't deliver. And for me, the most disappointing thing is just the raceability of the cars. They just don't seem to have that anymore, and they're in a bit of a pickle. And I don't think it is just because of Max Verstappen. Obviously, that is a huge factor because we had that race for the lead, and you always want to see races for the lead. But you look at the order, and it's like two Ferraris. You know, say Hamilton didn't have the issues, it probably would have been two Mercs, two McLarens, two Aston Martins. Yeah. No retirements.
They would have literally been 2x2 from first. Yeah, 2x2.
No retirements. No one within DRS. People unable to pass. And I think the problem, it's not even just the problem that 2021 baited us into this season. 2022 started off really exciting, and they also, this was like Liberty's, these regulations is like Liberty Media's and Formula One's new master plan to make really close field easy to overtake, budget cap so everyone's really close and stuff like that. And it's not working. It's really not working.
I guess this kind of leads us quite nicely into the next question, which is from QB Coach Mika. How does F1 fix their issues of it being a snooze fest? I mean, Formula One have been trying to fix issues of dominance for forever, basically, because they allow for it to be an open-ish sport in terms of creativity. And of course, you know, there's technical regulations, there's things they have to abide by, but you allow teams to try and come up with the fastest car possible. This is unfortunately what you will get from a basic understanding of Formula One. That is unfortunately what you will get. you look at, oh, it could be a spec series, but then that loses what Formula One is all about. You have the cost cap, which in some ways works, but in other ways works completely against trying to get a battle at the top of the field. Because if you don't have a regulation change for three, four years, and Red Bull get it so right and everybody else gets it so wrong, they can't spend any more money than Red Bull because there's a cap, which means that everybody is limited to a certain level of development and trying different parts and all that sort of stuff. So maybe, I don't know, tweaks.
Just to counter that, though, that I have been thinking about that narrative of, oh, well, because of the budget cap, no one can catch Red Bull. But the fact that Red Bull have completely changed their car, they've not even just made it better or kept it the same and no one can catch up because they can't spend money. They've made a completely different car. And we all know how good Red Bull and their design team and Adrian Newey is. But it is frustrating because, like, surely if they can completely change the concept of their entire car and still be dominant, if not even more dominant, why can none of the other teams do that? I'm not expecting Haas or whatever to do it. But Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, they have big budgets. They're at the top of this budget cap as well. And it is such a shame because we know how good it can be. And we've seen it before. Even 2013, Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull were dominating. But you had races where Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, Red Bull, they were all winning, and it was like, it was close in that regard. But yeah, it's not now. It's annoying. It's very annoying. And this is me as a Max Verstappen fan. I'm a Formula One fan first. I want to see close, exciting racing. I supported Max because he was an exciting driver that made daring overtakes and things like that. So when he's 25 seconds of the lead, I don't get to see it. And I know that it's like smallest violin in the world that he's winning all the races. And you're like, oh, I must feel really sorry for you. But
you are here to watch good racing. I want to see good racing. You're here to watch entertainment. Yeah. You're here to watch competition. And the only people that Verstappen are passing are Logan Sargeant, Bottas, Gasly, Ocon, Hülkenberg, and so on. And that's to lap them. It is interesting, the whole budget thing. Now, whether there is a world where the winning team can only spend a certain amount the next year, like, and then NFL it kind of goes up thing. That, like, you know, Williams and Alpine or whoever else has finished at the bottom this year can spend a lot more to develop their car. I don't know, because obviously they maybe do have that in the doing. Sense of maybe big brain thinking. They want that wind tunnel time because they do it for the wind tunnel, but they don't do it for the amount of money you can spend. I'm sure there are reasons behind that, but it's in the same breath, you have to commend Red Bull for what they've done. And it's clearly worked so well for them in this current era of regulations. And as you say, Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston Martin, they've all got these insane facilities to build a Formula One car. And they cannot do it. They can't catch them. It's as simple as that.
And this is in an era. This is what blows my mind the most, that if from 2010, so what is that, like 15 seasons of Formula One, only two teams have won the championship. It's just flipped between dominance between the two of them, right? And
thanks for reminding me.
Sorry, Ferrari fan and you, Matt. But what is frustrating is these regulations. You go back to, I don't know, like, the mid-2000s or whatever, I'm sure the rule book was nowhere near as complex. They weren't doing all these things to try and make it closer or you know, like the promise of these new regulations was that it gets them closer racing and people can't be miles ahead and spend more. Yet we're in the period of the most dominant, like, time in the sport ever. So, like, what are these regulations that can happen when the rule book was a lot more simple or whatever? You did get different winners and things. It's very bizarre that is actually happening when they're trying so hard to make it close that it's not. Like, how does that happen?
You know they're trying and it's doing the opposite effect. Maybe they just stop trying, rip up the whole rule book, make what you
just
want.
Say, make a car.
And we get a 10-team fight for the championship. Come on. Right, Tommy, what's your most memorable moment? We could go on for 3 hours about how Formula One is finished. Let's move on to something else.
Please keep watching, P1. My most memorable moment was the drive from Carlos Sainz. He deservedly got driver of the day. And the very little racing that we got, he also provided quite a lot of it. I think his move on Leclerc, sorry, Matt, was very, very good indeed. You know, a surprise move. And yeah, it was a surprising drive after yesterday. Did not see that coming, that Sainz would be flying through the field and Leclerc having those issues. So yeah, it was a really, really good drive from Sainz.
It certainly was. Apparently, if I say anything nice about anyone other than Charles Leclerc, I am a Charles Leclerc hater, even though Carlos Sainz's drive was brilliant and he did get driver of the day. As you say, his moves were great. Of course, Charles Leclerc was slightly hindered by his brake problems, which probably then meant that Carlos could send the move a bit easier on his teammate. But that being said, Carlos still dispatched of George Russell. His pace was great. He was only a couple of seconds off Sergio Perez, which I think, again, is a really good effort, considering that Ferrari looking quite fragile, quite tentative at times. I thought it was a great drive. Question from George Jensen 97. Why are Ferrari so afraid of team orders? Sainz was clearly faster, but still had to fight his way through twice. Sorry, Matt, in brackets. You don't have to apologise. I have fully processed the fact that Charles Leclerc's had problems with his car in race one of 2024. I can understand Ferrari not kind of bringing in team orders immediately, mainly because Charles Leclerc, well, was their golden boy. I'm not sure about 2025. We'll have to discuss that one another time. Sainz is leaving the team. Do they want to ruffle Leclerc's feathers almost immediately? Probably not. So that's why they decided not to do it. Again, they are also afraid of team orders just generally. So that's another factor. And look, we like the side-by-side action. It's very close. But every time they do get close, that's as close as they get. And it is brilliant to watch, especially when I know they haven't crashed. So kind of watching the clips back are when I can fully appreciate that. But yeah, maybe Ferrari also have an element of trust between them. But yes, there is still a little bit of time lost with those two fighting. But realistically, it might have cost Sainz an opportunity to fight Perez, potentially. He was only finishing a couple of seconds behind him in the end. But yeah, I'm sure they didn't really want to implement team orders immediately into the start of the season.
No, I can see why they did it. I mean, it's what Ferrari are like now, which is a strange thing to say, having grown up in the era of Michael Schumacher and then being that brutal team, or even, you know, a more recent history of like Fernando Alonso. And I remember one year where they literally broke Felipe Massa's gearbox on purpose to give him a 5-second penalty so Alonso could get the clean side of the grid. That is the extent that this team used to go to for a number one driver. And now they do seem like they're more willing to let them race. I will say, thank God they do, because it was some of the only action we saw in the entire race. But boy, was it good when it did happen, because those two, I'd have put money on them of having a collision by now. I think when it was announced that those two were going to be together in Ferrari, and you saw a bit of it in the first season they were together. And I think we said so many times, like, they will crash at some point. And so by some miracle, they haven't, because when they race wheel to wheel, they get so close. They did it again. Not as extreme as Monza, but they somehow don't give each other an inch, but it is respectful.
They give each other an inch at the very last second that is humanly possible to give an inch.
They give each other a quarter of an inch.
Are you trying to think of like a centimetre or a millimetre? Or...
yeah.
A quarter of an inch is very specific.
Yeah. Just smaller than an inch, yeah. It's superb to watch, but... I hope there's more of it, because probably not for Ferrari fans, because it gets the heart racing, but we need
but
to see more
of it. Probably the best bit of entertainment that we had throughout the entire race. So
and you can just see that already, like, you do wonder, Sainz, I know it fits the narrative, but, and he will just want to do well, whatever, but you do wonder how much it is fired up by the fact that now he doesn't have a drive. And what I will say is, like, there'll be all the tweets baiting you, of course, being like, have they fired the wrong driver and all this kind of stuff, which, like, no, I don't think that's the case. But what it has done is shown that, like, Mercedes and Red Bull and these teams, like, need to look at Carlos Sainz, because it would be a huge waste for him to go to kick Sauber and be battling for 12th. Please no.
Certainly would. We'll have to see how that one unfolds. Next question from Abraham Joe 33. How is this Sainz-Leclerc dynamic going to play out? I think it's going to play out with eventual collision. That's how I see it occurring. Especially, you know, Ferrari is scared to do team orders anyway. Are they going to get on the phone to Carlos Sainz, who does not have a contract with them next year, to get out of the way for Charles Leclerc if that happens? I don't know. I don't know if they'd even want to face that reality of then realising what Carlos would say, which is probably, no, you can absolutely F off. I am not driving for your team next year. So I don't know. I think they get on really well. They're great wheel-to-wheel racers, both of them. It's evident of that. So I don't think it's going to change that much, their dynamic, unless they have a crazy crash for the lead of a Grand Prix. Then they may well despise each other forever, but that's just Formula One, isn't it?
No, I think they are very good friends. I think Carlos even said it in that podcast we did with him, that one day when they're not, you know, teammates, their relationship might even be even better, that they're, like, really good friends. And I think he said that he's probably one of the closest drivers that he is to, outside of, you know, with Norris as well. So, yeah, they get on really well, and I don't think, unless something disastrous happens, it will change. Over the radio, it's always very different. And even if they do have those moments where, you know, Sainz saying, you know, jog on or whatever or what, they'll just get over it, I think. I don't think it's going to boil over at Ferrari.
It'll stand the test of time. Next question, Slosh 4000. How do you think the season will evolve for RB with Yuki and Danny? These two, didn't expect. Did you actually see that Danny Rick said that Yuki was an effing helmet?
No.
Yep. Wow. So that's interesting. I didn't expect these two to kind of clash.
If you'd have said any teammate dynamic,
yeah,
who would be the biggest fight between, like, that would boil over the most? They might even be last on my list, you know.
Mm. Yeah, you just think that they would just, even if there was a problem, not say anything. I don't know. It just seems very strange. And for it to boil over so early in round one is a strange thing in itself. You know, what's going on behind the scenes there that's causing this tension? Was it the fact that both of these drivers expected this year, with the hype, that RB would be a lot better? And perhaps just from a racing instinct side of things, they're a little bit frustrated? I don't know. But I am fascinated to see if this is, you know, is this a one-off? Or do they genuinely not really like each other? Or I don't know.
I think it's all from, if you missed it, Yuki Tsunoda's what happened at the end of the race, where, because we didn't see this on the broadcast, but Tsunoda essentially dive bombed Danny Rick on the cool down lap, and then sort of almost drove into him, or sort of got, like, really close to his car and drove past to make a point. And what I would say is, as a Yuki Tsunoda fan, I was watching that race and I was annoyed. It happened so many times. It happened so many times at AlphaTauri, where I'm like, Yuki's having a really good race. What is going on with strategy and all this kind of stuff? And then he just plummets down, because he was on for P10, P11.
He was fighting P10 with Zhou, wasn't it, at the time, I think?
Yeah, and he was, you know, ahead of Stroll. I don't think he would have got Stroll because Stroll was coming back through the field. But P11 was definitely on the cards, and you do want to beat your teammate because that's what you're up against. So it was frustrating for him that he had a slow stop, and then he got a different strategy to Ricciardo, so Ricciardo could have the softer tyres. Danny Ric wasn't on his level, it seemed, all weekend, so I can understand his frustration that he's now finished behind him and had to let him through. But there's no excuse for, like, what has he got to gain for that? It's just hot-headedness and just, however annoying it is, he's just putting himself in an awkward position with his team. Like, he's not going to get the better treatment or whatever if he's doing that, is he? He's just going to make it worse, if anything.
Exactly.
They're going to fall out with him and they're going to be annoyed at him. You don't want to start a civil war in your own team. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Especially when you think, where is he going to go next? Needs to put himself in the sort of driver market potentially. And, you know, what is going to happen to Yuki Tsunoda?
He's a really quick driver. Teams won't want to take the gamble on him if he's doing stuff like that.
Especially, you know, does he want to race for Red Bull? That second seat is not absolutely categorically signed off for Perez or for anyone. So it is strange because teams want someone that they can rely on and for it to be a consistent figure, not someone that can occasionally go off the boil. That's the one, maybe.
Well, let's put it this way. If Tsunoda is doing that over P13 in the Bahrain Grand Prix, if you're Helmut Marko, you're going, well, say Yuki has the race of his life and he's leading and Max is quicker and needs to win the race for the championship. This is like hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
And Yuki Tsunoda is acting like that over P14. He's going to like lose his mind over like having to let Max win a race or whatever or have team orders, and they can't afford to have that in a team. Like, that will affect you as teams like looking to hire you, because they'll be like, well, we can't give you orders because it's not like talking back orders, you're literally almost crashing into your teammate on the cooldown lap.
Yeah, it's very silly.
It's mad.
I'm sure he'll probably regret it, and
yeah, he will.
This will be a no topic, and it will be squashed by Saudi, and they'll be best of friends, and I don't know, Tsunoda will be riding on the back of Danny Ric or something into the paddock. But one thing that we did very briefly touch on was that he was fighting Lance Stroll, and I feel like we need to put some respect on Lance Stroll's name after the lap one incident to then claw his way back in an Aston Martin that wasn't very good, all the way up to P10, finishing just one place behind Fernando Alonso. I think that Stroll had a great race. Again, one of those that you just don't see anything of him, and then he pops up and scores a point. And yeah, I think he deserves a little shout out.
It was very much a race like we saw a lot of the time in 2022, where didn't qualify particularly great, but you know, it wasn't his fault at all that he got punted around at the start. So dropped all the way back, and then you're like, oh, Stroll's out of it, and then he's got a point.
Well,
that happened so many times, I feel like, in 2022 when he was with Vettel as his teammate. And, you know, he's done it again. It was a good drive.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Next question, Colky Doe. Does Haas have a chance of not finishing last in the Constructors after today's race? Kevin showed much better race pace than last year so far and defended against the RBs super well. I think Haas will be pleasantly surprised with their outing this weekend. Komatsu, as we heard and as we've spoken about, predicted that they would be last. And they weren't. Magnussen finished 12th, held off both the RBs. Hülkenberg was involved in that incident at the start, finished 16th. And I think the Haas looked like it was a little bit better on its tyre wear than perhaps previously. And they still have somewhat of one lap pace, as we saw with Hülkenberg getting through to Q3 yesterday. So I would say it's a positive look for Haas moving forward for this year. I will say that Haas usually are the best when they come out the blocks in the first round of the season and then slowly get slower because they don't have any money or anything to actually upgrade a car. But it's not looking too bad. So, I might have to apologise to them after predicting them finishing 10th in the Constructors.
I wasn't familiar with your game. it's an impressive performance. Yeah, Magnussen, P12, didn't fall off a cliff like they have done, managed to stay ahead of the two RBs. And yeah, what might have been for Hülkenberg, maybe we would have got P11. But again, I mentioned this on stream, but not going to be a lot of points available this season if essentially we've got five top teams. In the first race of the season, there's not one retirement, which is mad.
Yeah, it really is.
Because that is when cars have teething issues and stuff. And it's Bahrain. I know they had overheating issues and stuff, but they all made the checkered flag. Even Logan Sargeant, steering wheel pooping itself and then just decided to reboot and come back on and carried on. So even he didn't even retire from that. Same with Bottas with a slow pit stop. Everyone finished, and that's going to make it extremely hard to score points. So it genuinely could be a case of a bit like last year, really, where a rogue wet race and a crazy result could be the difference between 7th and 10th in the Constructors.
It certainly could. And they are ahead. I mean, if you'd told Haas at the beginning of the year you'll be ahead of Alpine, they probably thought, okay, all right, we're cooking. We might be getting some points every single weekend. No, not quite. But they're definitely a decent light for Haas so far. Next question, Morgs F1. Will Alpine score a point this season? Without Bottas and Sargeant incidents, they were 15 seconds behind at the end. I'm going to say they are going to score points. This must be the worst for them. Hopefully, fingers crossed for their sake, that this is the worst for them. You think of McLaren, they had a similar really poor start the last couple of years. So it is possible to figure out what's going wrong and fix it. And I'm sure Alpine will be able to find that. But as you said, Tommy, and as we've kind of been speaking about, this top five teams are pretty fast. I mean, Aston Martin, maybe you could argue a little bit off the top four this weekend, but I think that was a surprise. I think Lando said after the race that didn't really know why the Aston Martins were so far behind. So I'm sure Alpine will score a point, but it's going to be a difficult one. And this isn't an overnight fix. I can't see them turning up to Saudi and scoring points, for example. They've clearly got something fundamentally wrong with the car because it's slow in qualifying and it's slow in the race. There's no saving grace at the moment.
Yeah, it's looking like it's going to get worse for Alpine before it gets better. A page called Racing News 365 have reported that two of the key figures in their in Alpine in terms of like developing the car and stuff have handed in their resignations and are playing out their notice period. So the technical director and head of aerodynamics. So if that is the case, yeah, they're in such a mess. You know, it's not just they were in a mess last year, and it seems to be getting even worse. And if they're losing key personnel as well, they're only just going to sort of like get even worse. It could be a horrible, horrible long year for Alpine.
I was going to say as well, could this be the beginning of the end of Alpine's adventure in Formula One, full stop? You know, if they're not doing their brand any good and they're struggling and they're trying to push these Alpine road cars and they're finishing ninth or tenth, could that open up a spot for Andretti up the inside? I don't know. But right now, Alpine, yeah, they're going to want to forget round one and probably the next few races at the very least. Okay, let's go to biggest winner then, driver or team. My biggest winner... Max Verstappen, I think.
Literally.
I think it has to be, because he did win by a big margin. He's come out the blocks with a brand new philosophy of Red Bull car. It's still really quick. They've probably got a much higher ceiling than other teams in terms of development windows and development opportunities. Yeah, it's really bad. Formula One's okay. We'll turn up every week and we'll dream of a different pecking order. But yes, I think it has to be Max Verstappen, biggest winner this week.
It's hard to say against Verstappen, isn't it? You mentioned Stroll earlier as a bit of an unsung hero. I'll also shout out Zhou Guan Yu, finished 11th, which is very impressive. But maybe I'll say Sainz, just because he doesn't have a drive next year, and I think this performance will... if he keeps putting in performances like this, it's going to be very fascinating to see how the driver market pans out.
Biggest loser. Who lost the most at the 2024 Bahrain Grand Prix? Mine's going to be a team, and it's going to be Alpine. Yes, Alpine. I think close runners-up are both Bottas and Sargeant. Bottas he loves a long pit stop, that Valtteri. 52-second pit stop for him. And then Logan Sargeant.
And poor Logan, actually. Yeah, I'm sure everyone's expecting me to do a joke about how he's still ended up P20 and he's P20 in the title at the moment. But he was running well. Williams maybe not as good as we thought they might be. But he was there or thereabouts with Albon. So it's a big shame that happened to him. They both had steering wheel issues, I think, which is a bit worrying, because they were, of course, the team that... for so long we're running that steering wheel where they didn't have the big fancy LED screen.
No silly technology. They just had it inbuilt in the car with gear and how fast they're going and a few other things. But as soon as they've gone to something else, it's like, nope, does not work, which is very strange. But poor Logan, because as you say, he was doing all right. Right, let's now reflect on our predictions that we made all the way back on Tuesday, wasn't it? Because it was a day earlier. And let's see how well we've done. Biggest good surprise, I went for Lewis Hamilton. The only thing surprising was how particularly difficult his weekend was, to be honest with you. Not much to really talk about. Had a bad qualifying. And then just got stuck in the pack. I think he said after the race that had he started a few places further ahead, he probably would have finished there. But that's the beauty of qualifying.
Insane to me that he was only 4 seconds off as well, off Russell, after all that.
After all the chaos, his seat breaking. I think he had some recharge issues or something like that as well. That's just Hamilton, isn't it? He is decent in the race, but unfortunately not a lot of points to show for it this time. So I can't even argue 1/8 of a point. 1 inch of a point, a quarter of an inch of a point.
Biggest good surprise, I went for Fernando Alonso, which is looking quite good after qualifying. He was up there because my thinking behind it was not that he was going to do heroics like he did last year, but he'd be in that mix. But actually, Aston Martin fell into the exact place that everyone thought they'd be, which was behind the other four big teams.
Yeah, fifth fastest.
Ninth and tenth. So.
Alonso was getting mugged because he was trying to fight, but just kept just being overtaken. He was on a slightly different offset strategy, wasn't he? So we just saw him getting overtaken by everyone. But finishing ninth in no man's land, really, Aston Martin, which is a shame to see. Biggest flop. Okay, let me sit up for this one. I went for Esteban Ocon, and I feel as though I deserve a point here because Alpine was shocking. Both drivers deserve floppy points, to be honest with you. Gasly finished 9/10 behind his teammate. And I think anything associated with Alpine at the moment deserves a flop point. So come on.
Yeah, you can have it. There was there was a moment where Ocon was 30 seconds clear of Gasly, and I was going, you're not going to get this somehow.
And then I was like, oh my God, 17. No, Gasly's on softs. Oh, he's catching him at 4 seconds a lap. Come on, Gasly. So
The funniest thing about that whole situation is you could have said, if Gasly would have taken finishing like 12th or even maybe 10th and getting a point and not beating Ocon. You know that he would have taken finishing 17th and just beating Ocon over a point. You know he'd have been so determined on that run, putting in qualifying lap after qualifying lap, seeing the delta to Ocon going down, going, I have to beat him.
So
you just know that is the case. I went for biggest flop McLaren. Sadly not. I'm glad I was wrong.
They weren't floppy, but they weren't also surprising, were they?
Yeah, I think I personally was trying to claim that they would be like the worst of the best. So I think if they were behind Aston Martin, that's what I was kind of going for here. But they did pretty good, and I think Lando said that this isn't a track that really suits them or ever has, so they'll take a 6th and 8th.
They will. And also he kind of gave a little bit of hope, saying that he thinks that Bahrain and Red Bull is pretty much a perfect track for them, and that this should be the biggest gap of the season. I'm praying that Lando is right, and we'll have to wait and see. But I guess it does make sense, right? It's an abrasive track. Red Bull are really good on their tyres, and it just makes sense.
We saw that with their strategy as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, going soft, hard, soft. I mean, it's just a joke at this point, isn't it, really? Pole position. I went for Charles Leclerc, which I think was brave. I think it deserves a half participation point. Like, well done. Like, the first driver behind Verstappen deserves half a point. Thank you.
He actually six got the fastest rows. Time in qualifying as well, didn't he?
Yeah, that's half a point.
No, I think that makes
fastest
it even
time
worse.
In qualifying. I thought that's what it was. I thought that's what pole position is. I said fastest time in qualifying goes to
fastest on, well, Friday.
Yes, exactly. No points.
I went for Verstappen.
Yeah, well done. You did. Very happy with the money.
Took a risk.
You did. You really did. Let's get to our top three then, shall we? In third place, I went for Perez, and he actually outperformed my prediction, which fair play to him.
P3, I went for Alonso.
Yeah, no
winner.
Delusion. I don't think he's making your top three next week, that's for sure. Charles Leclerc, I went for P2, which is upsetting to say the least, but that did not happen. I think it could have happened without his brake issues, but it did not.
P2, I went for Carlos Sainz, which is really annoying because I backed him, but didn't get this one right, so no point.
And then finally, I went for a really risky strategy here. I went for Max Verstappen as the winner, and I'm going to clock in a point. Love that.
And I did the same, no surprise.
Well done, mate. Well done. So it's two all into one crazy prediction where I said Max will win the race by less than 15 seconds. And I'm pretty sure it was 15 seconds come halfway through the race. So I think after that, Max just chilled out. But no points, unfortunately, for me there.
He was literally watching the screen at one point, didn't he? Mentioned in the...
Yeah, he was watching Perez overtake Russell, I think it was. And he even said in the cool down room, yeah, that was a good move. I saw that. It's like, for God's sake. Bro's watching the race.
Yeah, madness. Mechanical issue for the RB20 during the weekend. No,
absolutely not. You tried to chef something, and unfortunately, you chefed up 20 vehicles finishing the race instead.
I know.
Well done, Tommy. Now, three crazy predictions from you, wonderful lot. First is M. Lawrence, both Mercedes DNF. That did not happen. Jarrett Ujula, double Q3 for stake. Nope, that did not happen. And SD Bestie 8, the Ferraris and Mercs were a lot closer to Red Bull than we think, and it's a three-way fight for the win. I remember reading that and being in dreamland going, God, can you imagine? And we didn't get even another car fighting for the win. So, but hey, Saudi Arabia is up next, a completely different track. It's going to be fast. It's going to be ferocious. It's going to punish mistakes. And we're going to see a crazy one, Tommy, aren't we?
Please, please be good. It is a track that's delivered in the past. And it's a very different track to Bahrain. So you never know. I hope whatever happens, there's something different thrown into the mix. Please.
Fingers crossed. Please. We don't have to wait very long. We're literally back once again next weekend. We'll be live on Twitch, Matt P1 Tommy, for both qualifying and the race. And we'll have all the podcast content both on P1 and also Wheel Knowledge. Don't forget that YouTube channel as well. We're going to be putting some content up on there. And also, do not forget P1 live show tickets if you want to get them. They are selling. So We'd love to see you. And that is it. Tommy, final thoughts?
Final thoughts are...
My God, it's over.
I've already said it, but just please be good, Saudi. Give us cool. some entertainment.
Tommy's brain is fried, as is mine, but we will see you next week for more delusion. Can't wait to see. Honestly, I'll be refreshed. Come Monday, we're ready to go again. So, yeah, we'll see you very soon. Lots of love, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Make sure you follow us on all of our socials. We're MattP1Tommy on Twitter, TikTok, Twitch, and Instagram. You can also sign up to our Patreon at the link in the episode notes for ad-free episodes, full video interviews, and extra bonus episodes for as little as $5 a month. Finally, make sure you're following us on Spotify. See you soon.
P1 is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.